You've tuned into Myth Behaving, a podcast where we get up close and personal with today's most imaginative authors. Every episode, we'll be sitting down with a new writer to discuss their magical worlds, futuristic visions, and how they bring their wildest ideas to the page. Sitting in for my wonderful Halloween partner again today is Jen Nixon. Jen, how was your week?
Pretty good. It's raining today, so it's fitting right in with that spooky Halloween vibe. How was yours?
I'm always jealous of your weather. You know, the weather has cooled here, though. It was high 90s. We even had one day that was 100, but this week it's dropped down into the 70s. It's lovely. Like, this is Southern California in October, November. So
yeah, there you go. You're getting there.
I'm so happy. I can't even tell you.
I imagine. So who do we have on the podcast this week?
I am so happy to have a friend of the show, Danica Stone, with us today. Danica is an author, artist, and educator who discovered a passion for writing fiction while in the throes of her master's thesis. A self-declared bibliophile, Danica now writes novels for both teens, Switchback, Internet Famous, and All the Feels, and adults, Inescapable, Edge of Wild, The Dark Divide, and Fall of Night. Switchback was selected as one of the best YA books of 2019 by the Canadian Children's Book Center and featured as a top 10 YA for everyone in Canadian Living magazine. Danica's Waterton mystery series was selected by Chapters for their Our Favorite Canadian Fiction category. When not writing, Danica can be found hiking in the Rockies, planning grand adventures, and spending far too much time online. She lives with her family and a house full of imaginary characters in a windy corner of Alberta, Canada. Danica, how is Canada today?
Well, where I am is very, very windy and snowy and cold. I was actually out going for a walk and I could barely breathe. The wind chill was so bad. So not quite the hundreds of California.
Oh my goodness.
I take your weather over California 100 any day.
The summer weather at least. Yeah. Not your first snow either. This is not the first snow for you, is it?
No, we are well into winter now. But I mean, it's good. I mean, I wouldn't live in Canada if I didn't like that. It's very, very beautiful. But yeah, we are definitely into winter. We are no longer in fall.
Yeah, I follow your, you know, I follow your Instagram and I see your lovely pictures. I'm always jealous that you're out and about so much and in those great Rockies.
It is. It's one of my favorite things. It's where I get actually the best ideas for writing is I do lots of solo hiking and then no one's talking to me, obviously. and I just kind of think about what I'm doing with my books.
It's awesome.
Yeah, let's talk about your books. What is your latest and greatest? I saw that you had a list of hidden projects and I got all excited.
Well, you're never really supposed to say what's on submission. So obviously, like I have books on submission. I have one YA on sub and I've got one adult book, which I consider the best book I've ever written out on sub as well, because I have two different agents. Mm-hmm. The one that I'm currently writing. So I'm actually at the point right now where I listen back to the book. That just is the way my brain works. I can hear when language doesn't work more than I can read when language doesn't work. That one is actually historical fiction, which is a digression for me. And it's actually about my own family coming to America because they came to America before they moved to Canada. And oh my gosh, they came and they didn't start trying to cross the plains until end of August, start of September. And it just went extremely badly. Right. If you ever played Oregon Trail as a kid, exactly the story I'm going to tell.
Dysentery.
yes, and actually one of the kids does die of it. It is a really difficult book to write. I'm usually a really fast writer. This one took me 10 months. Now, part of that was research. I did have a diary to work with, but I don't know, didn't naturally know why oxen were more difficult to control than cattle and why you would use oxen to pull a wagon, like things that I just didn't have experience with, but also because I found it really hard because half the family dies. So that was the one I was writing. And yesterday I actually typed the end and I'm so happy with it. Like I just am thrilled with how it came together because you never know, right? You're confined in something where you're trying to tell a real story. But I was very pleased with how it all came together.
And did you write it in a diary format, like the book that you used to inspire you?
No, I didn't. So the diary itself was written many years after the journey. So there was a number of kids, many do not survive the journey, but one of the kids actually wrote a journal about it after they were off the planes. And I used that journal to inform it, but I write it as a novel. And so I chose a character that was to that point voiceless, which would be my great 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 grandmother.
Wow.
Because I'm a mom myself, and I thought like I could really connect to her more than I could 12, 13 year old kid. Write it from the point of view of the mom. You know, you kind of go into this. I mean, it's like going to Mars, right? You have no idea what you're getting into. These people from England, they had no idea what it would be like in October in Wyoming. No idea. And so they were just like trying to cross the plains in the 1850s, and they just, it was bad. Everything goes wrong. Absolutely everything goes wrong.
Wow. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm really happy with it, but it was interesting. As I wrote, I kept saying to my family, because I always talk about my books, I need to give hope. Like somewhere there needs to be hope, because otherwise it's just the most horrible story.
Right.
And I think I did it. So I'm really pleased, and I'll be interested when I start asking beta readers how they feel about it too.
Yeah, so. Congratulations on the end. I think most authors know like that feeling when they get to write, like, oh, I did it. Oh, I did it. Yes. But I think a lot of readers don't understand that. They think like, oh, you know, you've got a plan and it comes and blah, blah, it's all organic to me and I don't see the behind the scenes. But yeah, you deserve huge congratulations every time you finish a book. So.
Oh my gosh, yes. Anybody that finishes a book, just one book. And every time, and I've written many, every time I get to a place where I'm like, oh goodness, I think I'm in over my head and I don't know where to go from here. And this one, I felt it more because I was constrained by fact. And I did, of course, flex. I'm allowed to do that. It's historical fiction. It's not real people. I mean, it is real people, but nobody was there.
Right.
Except for this journal that was written after the fact.
After, yeah.
But yeah, I think anybody that gets to that point with writing, like huge kudos to you. Like just to finish is like the biggest marathon. So yeah, I was riding pretty high yesterday.
That's awesome. Nice.
Celebrate. Yeah. Yep.
And what's next? Because if you're me, you get done and then you get about a day or two and then you're like, oh no, I've got to do something else.
No, I don't have something really specific lined up for this one. I want to polish. And then I know that my agent, Stacy, who handles my adult end of my writing, she's waiting on it. So I'll get that to her. I always have a bunch of little kind of snippets that I'm not sure which one I'm going to jump into. I feel like I ought to choose something happier.
It's
hard. So maybe more YA, more humorous, because that tends to be my way, YA style. But I also do have some thrillers that I have only the opening chapters. So I basically have the setup and I have no idea where it's going to go. And sometimes that's the best way to write. Just to kind of jump in and just see what happens. I think my brain sometimes needs it, especially after a book like this, where it's very controlled, like you're trying to get them from one place to another. So I know they have to follow the trail. They have to do that.
Right.
Nice.
So you like to break
news? Go ahead.
Sorry. We always talk over each other. Yep. It's terrible.
That's okay. Sorry, I missed the question though.
I was like, I just wanted to, like, so you like to break the rules, obviously, because everybody has to break the rules. What's one of your favorite rules to break?
That you should find a genre that you're good at and you should stick with it. No, I can't do that. I always tell this story. My friend Kim, who I work with, always describes me as having a border collie brain, and that you don't have enough stimulation, you destroy the carpet. That is really how I am as a writer. I've done certain things and I know how to do them well, and I don't care now. So now I need to make things harder. I think sometimes we get caught doing the same thing over and over because it's comfortable. And I mean, my goodness, if I was making a ton of money, I'd find a way to make it interesting for myself and I'd just do it. But I love breaking that rule. I love writing whatever I want. Like I've never written, for instance, like a full blown, just like romance, like really hot. I will do that someday, I'm sure, if I get inspired. I have written science fiction. I've never sold any, but I would love to have one of those hit the shelves. So I do a little bit of everything. And every time I send it to my agents, they're like, oh, Danica, what are you doing?
Yeah, they don't like that. They want consistent. You to stay in one lane.
Yep,
yeah.
Stay in your lane. Yep. That's exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. So Danica, you are our Halloween guest. Congratulations.
Oh my gosh.
So, and I know you write thrillers, so I want to hear like which one is your favorite, which one would you recommend? I mean, we would recommend them all. Obviously you're awesome, but which one would you recommend for somebody to dive into?
Okay. So, I mean, I love them all. If you're looking for something that's just come out, then it's got to be Inescapable, which is literally the first ghost story I ever wrote. That is a ghost story. But some people are like, oh, ghost stories, maybe not for me. I'm not into supernatural. And then I would say, do the Waterton series. Edge of Wild is the first one. And that one is more like a serial killer story. That's the premise. So it kind of depends what people are looking for Halloween. Ghost story versus really creepy thriller. Both of them are thrillers, but different ways of approaching it.
Yeah. And how did you approach your research for Supernatural?
Okay. So this one, like always, and I'm sure it's the same for you and Jen as well. I'm always inspired by something in my own life. Always something happens that kind of sets it off. So for me, about a number of years ago, my brother passed away, my younger brother, very suddenly. And I remember at the time, because it was this horrible, tragic time, my mom really feeling like if she could just somehow negotiate it away. And that's part of grieving, you know, like it should have been me. And anyone who loses a child, like I can't imagine what that's like. But that really sparked this idea. Like, what if you were begging someone to stay and the ghost did, you know, what if you're saying the ambulance is coming, stay with me. And then all of a sudden you have a ghost that is just causing chaos for your whole life. How do you untether that? And of course there's the whole metaphor of we at some point in grieving need to let go. I am now at a place, so it's been 5 years, that I can really think of my brother fondly and remember foolish things from our shared childhood. Like it's awesome, but it's a process to get there. And that was really the spark of it. For research, like I don't have like a ton of, like I didn't research like a ton of stuff about ghosts or how they might appear. I know in my family, we always had these, like dad would tell us these little creepy stories. And so I stole little parts of that.
Nice.
Kind of weave in family stories. And of course my grandparents, on my mom's side, they were immigrants, and that kind of, there's a very different belief system in God and the connection to the dead that comes from this Ukrainian Russian background my mom has. And so like my grandmother, like very religious, and you see some of her reflected in Amy's mom in the story, you know, sort of like, we will go to the priest and he will solve this kind of thing. And so you see some of that. The only research that for that book I did a lot of was something that I had background in, which was the artistic figures, because Amy doesn't just experience the ghost of her husband, but also the ghosts of some of these famous artists from the past. Her husband is also an artist. So I, of course, looked up and read things and researched and watched documentaries. And it was really interesting to build the voices of, say, someone like Andy Warhol. Like, what would he be like as a ghost? And I really enjoyed them. They are more humorous than frightening, as her husband is.
This episode of Myth Behaving is brought to you by the Bath Bomb Diva, producing fine handcrafted bath bombs and shower steamers. Scents ranging from fruits to floral to musk to weird French names, the Diva offers a wide selection for maximum olfactory goodness. Bath bombs are offered with and without prizes inside and made using water-soluble dyes for no messy residue. Entirely coincidentally in time for Halloween is the Final Girl bath bomb, scented with Grim Reaper oil, which, oddly, is floral and pungent. It is decorated with a plastic stabby slashy toy and containing a button picturing an icon of 80s and 90s horror. Halloween-themed glass bottles and toy cauldrons of bubble bath are also on offer. Check all the creations out at www.bathbombdiva.com. And thanks again to Bath Bomb Diva for sponsoring the show.
So if you had to pick YA or adult, which one would you pick?
Wow.
That's
Sophie's choice,
that,
right?
That is the hardest thing. Okay, then I just wouldn't label it and I'd write somewhere in the middle.
In the middle?
Oh, I would totally have to because I would have to straddle. I don't think I could choose one or another. I mean, I guess I probably have more adult books now. So maybe I should choose YA because maybe I have more left over there. I don't know. It is a strange thing to try to do that.
Yeah, that's a wow, Jen. Jen's going for the horror here. For
you know, well, it is Halloween.
Exactly.
Difficult.
That's nice. I'm curious. I'm going to switch gears just a little bit. I'm curious. I know you're very Canadian and we love Canada so much. But I'm curious, like, do you see any difference between your Canadian audience and your American, your U.S. audience?
Okay, that's interesting. Okay. I know when I'm writing, but I don't try to change it or edit it for a specific audience, but I do know before I send it to my editor, I kind of go through and pull back some of the Canadianisms. Like, for instance,
one of my favorite shows on TV right now is from Canada. I love it.
That's awesome. But there's certain things that I would say that no one in the US would know what I was talking about. I guess I didn't realize the word parkade didn't really get used commonly in the States.
Yeah, we have no clue. What is
that? There you
go.
So it's
go
a
ahead.
Parking garage. But
Parkade. Interesting.
Use that word in the dialogue and then like two sentences later kind of half parkade. Describe it so that seriously, that's how I learn a lot of stuff about other cultures.
And it's funny, like we don't think of it as different, but like I would say when I was in grade 6, but I didn't realize that's a different phrasing in the States. It would be in sixth grade.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's
right.
A different way of, I didn't know that. And there's certain words that I know are archaic sort of Canadian words, like Chesterfield is a couch. And everyone in Canada would know I was saying couch, but everyone in the States would be like, what is she talking about?
And I would think cigarette if you said Chesterfield. I'm like, why is she talking about that?
But I don't tend to use that word. But it's funny how there aren't really. So I go through and I sort of try to pretend I'm not Canadian as the last second. Although when a book takes place in Canada, like say Switchback, it takes place right here where my cabin is. I'm actually talking to you guys from the cabin and it takes place in Waterton. And I remember I kept very specific Canadian things. Like there's a fast food chain that I love called A&W. I don't know if it's spread into the States, but it's definitely throughout Canada. And I remember my my editor, Holly from Macmillan, she was like, what is this thing you're describing? And I was like, oh, it is so good. And if you were starving, you would be imagining having a teen burger. And so I kept that part in. So it is funny. I do a little bit of what Jen is describing, where you kind of keep it for context of it being in Canada.
Nice.
Which is really great advice for any of our writers out there. Like, go ahead and write your thing, but then, you know, it's a good idea to expand your audience by being clear on all that.
Especially
watch out regional for the localisms. Yeah.
Yes, regionalisms. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's good advice for all.
Yeah, I think if you're talking A&W, like A&W, the burger place, at least have it out here in the West. So
hey, there you go.
So there you go.
I think
go.
We have it attached to our Long John Silvers. If it's a
oh, that's wild.
I think
that's so
Long
cool.
John Silvers. Oh, that's yeah. Ours are attached to KFCs. I don't know if that's to Kentucky Fried Chicken. It's not Kentucky Fried Chicken anymore.
Well, yeah,
they changed it. I don't know what it's called now, but we still call it KFC.
They must be expanding then. And then I know Tim Hortons has really gone global in the last while, because that used to just be.
We know of it.
We know their coffee.
Their coffee. We're busting out our Canadian here.
Coffee, depending on where you're from in this country.
Caffey.
Awesome. Coffee.
Yeah. Tim Hortons. No, we know about that one. So that's awesome. And I want to hear more about Switchback, if you wouldn't mind, like, because that was the correct me, but that was your first like kind of horror, kind of scary, kind of adult, right?
Switchback? No, that was that's Lost in the Woods.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I've read a lot of them, and they get, and then it's just like it's another Danica Stone. I just read them.
You are my favorite. If you're talking about Edge of Wild, the Waterton one, where it is like the series, that's a good, really good Halloween one. So that is definitely not for
kids. Yes, not YA. Right.
Well,
Well, yeah, exactly, Jen.
It's funny, as a teacher, that's one that I don't mention to them, but inevitably I will have some seniors will come up to me and be like, "Oh, I read this one and I really liked it." And I'm just like, "I'm pretending. You don't know that's me."
Right. Yeah. I was reading Stephen King when I was 16. So it's
there you go. Yes. Exactly. So was I. Yes. Yeah. I think it's you bring that in. Okay. So I still have the house, like where I'm actually broadcasting from is the house.
That's the house.
This is the house. I'm actually sitting in the kitchen.
The cabin that you refurbish and everything.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So my Swedish grandparents built this like 100 years ago.
Right.
Great grandparents. And my grandma grew up here and my dad grew up here and I grew up here with my siblings. And now like we're at the tail end of a very large renovation. Mm-hmm. And growing up in a town which is so small, you really get this sense of isolation. And I love the town and I love the people here, but I also know how it feels to be an outsider here. And so I remember talking to my dad when I was a kid and he would talk about certain people in town, like, well, they're not really from Waterton. And I'd be like, what do you mean? Well, apparently, according to my dad, you had to live here from the 40s to be here, like, really from Waterton,
right.
Which is ridiculous. There are people who live here, you know, who work for the park and they've been here 20 years. Mm-hmm. I think they're from Waterton too. Yeah. And so I took this idea of like, what is it like to live in this very insular community that in the summertime, they want everybody to come, but in the winter, they're like, go away. This is our town, you know, like stay away from here. Yeah. And then what if you take this kind of big wig guy from New York, who's going to come in and he's going to straighten this town out and fix the hotel. Like, what would that do to people? Mm-hmm. And for at least one person in the book, it sets him off where he becomes the target. And the guy is just hates him. And so starts off with little things, you know, people snooping around the property, and ends with like, there's a murderer coming after him. And so I took all of this like kind of local mythology, things from my family, these stories that they would tell. One of the stories I mentioned, and I think it's even in the dedication, is my dad was one of the kids lost on the mountain where the trail disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
My dad grew up here and in telling that story of the trail just being gone and night falling and they were little kids and not knowing where you were and how you couldn't see the trail anymore, I kind of wove that in and it has a little, just a touch of supernatural to it. And as I wrote, just this storyline evolved that was quite complicated and I ended up breaking it into three books. So the first book is really Rich's story about trying to come to this town and find a way to fit in. Meanwhile, there's a serial killer. And so it's like, sort of, you're trying to figure out who is it, because you have this whole cast of characters who all have their own manipulative reasons. And yes, I love them. I do.
Of course.
Yeah. And then each other book has sort of a different character it follows. And you sort of find out all the dark secrets of the town. And when I published it, the very first one, I did actually write a letter to everyone in town, which is not actually that many. There's like, you know, less than 100 live here in the winter. But I wrote a letter to all the people I knew. And I was like, hey, this is fiction. This is fiction. It's not based on anyone. Mm-hmm. I've changed the names of even businesses. Mm-hmm. Well, then I found out later that everybody, of course, went out and bought it. And then they spent the winter trying to figure out who I was talking about. It's just,
of course.
Wow.
Of course it is. And it's just that kind of small town. But honestly, the townspeople of Waterton have been my biggest supporters. I mean, I love awesome. Being here. They are amazing people. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure as they read, they were like, well, yeah, this guy coming in telling us how it should be done. I wouldn't like that either. And
right. He deserves a serial killer.
Yeah, right.
Oh, goodness.
They're gonna vote a new position into the town. Town serial killer.
And when you're writing that, do you have like a soundtrack? Do you listen to anything? Have the TV on in the background? Like it's silent?
I usually write in my kitchen and my kids are like chaos everywhere. Now that the cabin is functional again, I will often escape to the cabin and I am shocked by how much faster I can write when I'm not being asked to feed them a whole bunch of times. And my kids are older, of course, because mm-hmm. the books were written, I guess, almost the first one about 10 years ago. But I do sometimes listen to music. Usually it's soundtracks. Like I don't like having words because then it kind of distracts me. But if I have something that's like, I don't know, the Inception soundtrack comes to mind. I think I was listening to that when I was writing Edge of Wild because it just is sort of classical, but interesting mm-hmm. and has kind of mm-hmm. creepy feel to it. If you've ever listened to that soundtrack.
I love movies and their soundtracks because without soundtrack, sound in the movie they would just be terrible. So I've never tried that with no words. I'm gonna have to try that.
Yeah,
I'm gonna make a Spotify list of all lyrics.
And there's a number of them that are just like hours long on YouTube. I used to listen to something like Three Steps to Hell or something like that, and these like really magnificent overarching kind of fantasy themes. And I would listen to those while I was working on what, like my fantasy writing. So, which has never been released, but we'll, that's not about me.
See, I'm afraid with my weird brain, Rob, if I do that, I'm going to not see the movie in my head because I don't see things in my head, but I'll have the dialogue in my head and I'll have the setting in my head. Right. And I can't do this with the soundtrack. Go back to music.
Yeah, you need different kind of a stimulus. Poor Jen.
Jen and my weird brain.
Yeah.
I think that the key is just whatever way works for you,
mm-hmm.
you've just got to run with it.
Right, right. You hear a lot of writers like, I've got to have my coffee. And other writers like, no, it's tea. It's got to be tea. And like, they're violently opposed to any, because if you don't have what works for you, then you aren't writing. And that's the sin, right? That's the crime. So absolutely. Well, we're drawing close to another conclusion here. So I'm going to have Jen ask you our last question.
My favorite characters. I would love to talk to her, but I would want her to tell me about my life.
Nice.
Anything in particular? Anything in particular you're worried about or wanted to know?
Not worried so much. This is just a random story, but my dad has also passed away. He used to read tea leaves and he was exceptionally good at it.
Ooh, where that's he would so describe cool.
clear moments in time that I would then run into moments. And I do mean so clear, like saying you're standing at the foot of this giant Buddha. I mean, it's like the biggest Buddha I've ever seen. I don't know where you are, but you're standing there. And I was like, whatever, I'm not going to Japan. And then being in Maui a decade later and coming around a corner and there's a foot and I look up and there's a giant Buddha and it's the second biggest Buddha in the entire world. And it's right there in Maui. That's so awesome. I love that, this sense. I mean, physics tells us everything's happening anyway. I don't know. I just love that idea. And I've not had it for many, many years, but that you can have this little snapshot and there you are living your life, following this path that seemed so random. And yet there you are. And someone saw it many years ago. So I don't know. That's a strange reason to do it. I'm not worried about it. I believe we make our own future. But I do think sometimes we run into little moments that were kind of meant to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I love that. That's nice. That is a great place for us to close. So we are going to end here. Danica, thank you so much for joining us again. You are so giving. I love everybody should follow you and read your books and everything, but I do love seeing your pictures on Instagram and I'm always cold when I see them because it always looks so cold. So
yeah, this morning, the video I posted, I was freezing. And thank you so much, Rob. You are always so generous with your time. And Jen, it was so fantastic to meet you. And
same here.
If you ever need someone again, I would love to come back on and support the show.
Oh, you know, I'm holding you to that because we will swing around on when your next book releases. Let me know. We will get you on as soon as we can. We'd love having you on. So. And Jen, I want to thank you again for another wonderful show. Happy Halloween to everybody.
Happy Halloween, everyone.
Be safe.